Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Immediate Influence. This is your host, Ron Hudson, and tonight I have with me Pam Raglan, who is a thought shift leader, or the thought shift leader, expert, as well as a speaker, author, and teacher. And during tonight's show, this special segment, she's actually going to discuss how you can work less and earn more. I'm very, very pleased to have her on the show tonight. It's I'm sure going to be a very full of really good content, and by the time we're done, you'll walk away feeling like it was time well invested for yourself. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
Great, great. So tell us, go ahead and first tell us a little bit about how you got started talking, or you came up with this thought shift expert, and then, became a thought shift expert, and then relate that, how you utilize that to help or will help our listeners tonight become more productive in their business as well as earn more money.
Right. Well, what happened for me was I was actually transforming companies. I did Fortune 100 turnarounds, and I decided I was tired of that lifestyle and it was time to move on, and I was going to open up my own business. And the whole work less, make more thing kind of comes up because I was working about 80 hours a week and I didn't really know how to do anything differently. But I set an intention that said I was going to work 4 days a week, make at least as much money as I was making before, and I wasn't going to travel all the time like I did before, and I had really no idea what I was going to do. And I came across an article on coaching. And I said, oh, I've been doing that. When you change companies, that's what you're doing. So I began doing it, and I just really felt like I was pulling teeth. I would notice things that were in people's way, and I just felt like it was too difficult to help people change. And it's one thing to change a company, and my hallmark was really helping people change quickly and effortlessly, even in companies. But when I began working with individuals, it just felt too slow, so I looked for a better way. And ultimately, I realized that I had this ability that is really based on a gift that I call thought shifting, to go in and remove huge chunks of baggage that's in people's way, or to remove it all. It was really through that intention of helping people change quickly and effortlessly and just looking for continuously better ways to do that.
Okay. So give us an example of how it is that you worked with a company, and then we'll go into how you actually work with individuals utilizing this, this ability that you have that has turned into what is called thought shifting.
Right, right. Well, what's an interesting thing about anytime you're trying to change really anybody, a company or individuals, you hit upon some resistance to change. And what I got really good at working with companies was identifying where that resistance was coming from and helping people through it. And I think that's one of the reasons I was able to really reduce what I call the fallout. Those are the people that when you're changing your company, they just can't handle the change and they leave. And what I...
That is so true. Go
yeah.
ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, but of course there's always, if you look at the big picture, there's always a negative side effect whenever people can't handle the change and they leave, because that starts sending a message to the rest of the culture, the rest of the environment, that there's something bad about the change, that they might need to worry about their job. So you really, what I did that was really different than what most people do when they're changing companies is I just really worked on how I could reduce that fallout. And what I found was underneath the covers, when I got underneath the covers with people of what they were really afraid of and they were resistant to, there was always kind of a fear of something. And, you know, ultimately that fear, and I'm sure you know this because what you do, but it comes from some kind of negative conditioning or baggage or, you know, something that they're carrying with them into the job. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we go, you know, we work in these companies, whether it's a small business or a big business, but ultimately it's made up of a whole bunch of people that all have their own things that they're bringing to the table. So I got good at just identifying the fear that people would have and helping to really mitigate that fear for them, whether it was actually showing them that they had nothing to be afraid of or whether it was helping them through that fear because maybe their fears were completely valid and they just needed to learn how to deal with whatever their fear was. And that was really, I mean, I've really been helping people change for a long time because I've done process improvement and it's all about change. But that's really when I would say I refined my ability to kind of really help people at another level, was just kind of realizing I was getting under the covers of that. So, you know, you take that to a small business, and it's really the same thing. It may show up in different ways. I mean, the small business owner may be afraid to be too successful, so they may be holding themselves back. There may be they may be afraid that they're going to lose their business, so maybe they're not treating their employees with abundance. They're treating them with lack. They're worrying about tomorrow. There's all these different ways that we as people bring ourselves into our business.
I'm curious to know, in the situation that you mentioned where you were dealing with people who, I mean, at the root of that being, it was really fear, at the root of the change or resisting the change, I should say, was fear of the possibility of losing their job, or just some people are just resistant to change. But we know that most of the time that is rooted in fear, and that they are afraid that they won't be able to handle the new standard that's been set, or be able to adapt to the new technology that's been implemented, or whatever the reason may be, or be able to really assimilate into the new culture that a company sets forth when they come up with a new vision for the company. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So when you would come across those people who were resistant to that, and as you and I have already said during the course of our conversation, is that it's rooted in fear. How did you deal with that? How did you really hit that head on and then turn that around and help people actually really become a cohesive part of the team, and then help the CEO or senior executives or the leaders of the company move forward?
Right. Well, first I want to kind of lay a foundation to that, because one of the things that I learned in changing companies is I didn't necessarily deal with everybody's fear. So it kind of went like this. If you were, it tends to be that if any time you're implementing some kind of a change, and this is true of companies as much as it is in society, that you're going to have about 10% of the people that are on board with the change. They see the value in it, and they're basically the easy sell. They're the ones that you really need to have them get on board, and they're going to bring the 80% in the middle along. And then there's going to be about 10% that are going to actively resist the change no matter what you do, really. And I used to spend a lot of effort on them, and I soon realized that was wasted effort, because they were really never going to come around, because they were so determined to stay stuck in kind of where they were. And I really just got to where I didn't deal with those, that bottom 10%, unless they were the senior management, one of the members, you know, the board, the chair, you know, of the company, senior director, vice president, et cetera. If they were in a senior position, then I had to deal with them, and so occasionally that would come up. So I'm going to kind of frame it in that perspective. So those are the tough cases, because they're highly resistant, they're highly placed in the company, and they have the potential to do a lot of harm to the change effort and really to sabotage what's going on. So I would really use the process, and part of it I would say is intuitive, and part of it is just kind of my continued understanding of human behavior and really studying it for the last 27 years. But I would look at the people, and I would identify, it might be by what they were saying, it might be by what they weren't saying, what was really underneath the covers. And so for different people, it's different things. Some people may be afraid they're going to lose their job. Some people may be afraid they're going to lose power. And very often when I would go into a company, I was kind of turning it upside down. So it was giving the employees more authority, which then enabled them to better help the customers, which then made the customers happy and made the company more money. But by doing that, those senior executives would perceive, if the employees have more power, I have less power, so therefore this is not a good thing for me. So what I would do is I'd help them identify other ways. And, you know, it's true that they would not have as much power, so it wouldn't be useful to say, oh, yeah, you're going to have just as much power as you had before. But what I'd help them do is both understand why it was going to be okay that they didn't have the same kind of power and the advantages of that to them. So it may be, hey, rather than having all this resting on your shoulders, now you have other people helping you. You're not doing it all yourself. And you know, I would look for the advantages. I would look for the things that would appeal to them. And a lot of it's really individual. You kind of have to watch people and say, all right, what's important to this person? This person over here cares about relationships. This person over here, really fundamentally, they're concerned about their job and they're operating from lack and security. So a lot of it's very individual, just like people are. I mean, people are very individual. And then I would tailor the message and the approach for those highly resistant, highly placed people into a way such that I could kind of help them along with the change. So it was really more where I was kind of holding their hand through it. And, you know, a lot of them came along. Every once in a while, there were people that didn't come along. And ultimately, they would end up having to make a decision about whether that was the company that they wanted to stay at or not, because the company was changing, and they needed to adapt to that. And now what I do that's additional with that now, with the addition of thought shifting, is because of this ability to be able to go in and get under the covers at the baggage that's there and then eliminate that, that helps people work through their change a lot easier and more effortlessly than I used to be able to do it, because it used to just be based on what I noticed and helping them change their outward behaviors. Now it's more like kind of change from the inside out. And that makes it a lot easier in terms of helping the companies and people that are resistant to change and so forth. And it's really the same process, you know, when you, what I find so fascinating is you work with a smaller or medium-sized company, you might have, let's say, a partnership where you have two different partners, but if you've got one person that's on one page and they've got their own fear of stuff and you've got another one, those two together can sabotage the company. So it's really kind of the same process, but it's just, you know, it's really just a matter of the scale at which it happens.
Dealing with an individual, I remember several years ago, I was doing some consulting work at a financial services company here in Tulsa, and the fascinating thing that happened during the course of that was at the very beginning of training that I was doing for the company, which was really to teach them how to get more business, and it wasn't related so much to sales as it was, here's a step-by-step process to help you get more referrals, which will cut down on the amount of time that you actually have to go out and beat the pavement or pick up the phone and call someone and ask them for referrals or ask them for more business or whatever, actually getting on the phone, cold calling, which is what some companies have their people do, and I'm not against that at all. In fact, I'm one of the few people who enjoy cold calling. But so what I ran into in that company is that even at the beginning when I laid out the vision, I had buy-in from the president of the company, president and owner of the company, and everyone in the room, in addition to having buy-in, there was enthusiasm, really, even with the buy-in, simply because they saw how beneficial it would be to have a process or have processes in place that would actually allow them to work less and earn more, because it was more profitable for the company to have referrals as opposed to what they were paying per lead or per customer or per client, whatever you want to call them, the ones who were coming in through the Yellow Page ad or the TV ad or the, you know, whatever medium that they came in. And they were, this company was great. The president was really good at tracking everything. But so he knew, just like anyone has, I think, common sense enough to realize that if someone calls you up and says, Pam, I heard about you from John, told me you did a great job, I want to bring you in. That business cost you what? It cost you an investment of your time, and that's it. You know, but you didn't have to pay $5,000 for a display ad to generate the leads to finally get to that one person out of, one out of three that may say, yeah, I want to bring you in. I want you to do, I want you first, do your dog and pony show, and then I'll hire you. So it was really fascinating to run into that I ended up running into resistance later on as we were working out and I was doing the training and meeting with them on a daily basis and walking them through the process and giving them the scripting of how to word things, because they didn't realize how important it was in terms of what the impact was on the people coming into the office, how they were talking to them about their business and how beneficial it would be even for the client to refer someone. So anyway, I ended up running into some resistance within that company that totally caught me off guard. And we had to, the president and I actually ended up sitting down with one guy in particular. And it turned into, it was one of the strangest experiences that I'd ever had. This guy was so resistant that I thought that at one point the president was going to fire him. And eventually what ended up happening is after I asked this guy a few questions, he actually began to cry. And afterwards, we were able to talk through things and find out what was at the root of what was going on with him. And we worked it out, and he got back on board with it. But it was absolutely fascinating to me, and that's human behavior has always been fascinating to me and will continue to be. I'm so enthralled and excited and fascinated by how we as human beings behave.
Right. And in that case, and I have a couple of different like observations about that, because very often, I mean, people come to me who are changing, let's say, companies, and I've had clients that I'm coaching through, and they're running the change efforts at their organizations, large international companies, and I could literally write an entire book on this and how to change a company. But one of the things that I always find fascinating is, you know, again, it's the people that are bringing themselves, so there's kind of really a couple points. One of the things, I know I shared with you a little bit about the measures I have where I identified how much of the negative thoughts are in people's way, and when I found that it's like 97.4% of all the average person's thoughts are operating in your way, and it's almost all hidden in the subconscious, 96.4% almost all hidden in the subconscious, you can start to see why things like this happen in companies, because chances are this fellow was operating from his hidden negative conditioning, didn't even necessarily realize he was doing it or reacting that way, and it wasn't until really somebody began to talk to him that there was an opportunity to kind of bring that to the surface. And that's one of the things that makes dealing with especially changing companies and individuals also, but at an individual level you don't have as much cause and effect. But when you go into a company, you start to have more cause and effect. If one person does this, and depending upon where they're placed and who, you know, if they've got subordinates and if they've got colleagues that, you know, they have some influence over, then it starts to have kind of a ripple effect because of whatever the person is bringing in from their past into the job. And so that's the first thing that I would kind of notice is that, you know, that's, you know, it's so interesting. It's just like we bring ourselves to our parenting, right? And that's how we pass these things on to our kids. Well, the same thing, true. We're bringing it into our company. And because the problem is so pervasive, you tend to have a lot of people who are, first of all, not even doing jobs that they like to do, that they're really misplaced in their job in the first place. They're not happy. And then they've got all this hidden stuff that's in the way. And then you add on top of it that you've got a lot of companies where the systems just don't make sense. I mean, like you said, what you were bringing in was something that seemed pretty logical and it made a lot of sense. And so then you were surprised because, you know, of course this makes sense and why would you get resistance? You know, and then that brings me to my second observation, though, about helping companies change. Is one of the things, I have kind of a step-by-step process that I use in helping companies change, and the very first thing that is number one on top of the list is identify the big problem that you're solving. And what I find a lot of times is when people are creating change in companies, let's say there may be a vision amongst the senior executives and so forth, but somehow that problem that you're trying to solve doesn't get trickled down to the employees and the people who are affected by the change. And it's always easier to do things the way you've always done it because we're so much operating by autopilot with all this stuff in our subconscious, right? So as soon as I ask you to do something different than what you're doing now, it's work. And so it's natural for humans to say, well, you know what, you're asking me to do something different. You're going to make me work because it's easier for me to do stuff the way I've always done it. So why should I do that? What's the big compelling reason that is going to make me want to go do something that's going to be make me think about what I'm doing every day instead of just doing it the same old way I've always done it? So I would, you know, I would always advise, like in any situation like that, is that the first thing that happens is that you really, and sometimes you kind of have to exaggerate it a little bit, but you have to go in and say, okay, this is the problem that we're solving. And it's more difficult, you know, there's a, I forget exactly the way the book, I always remember the gist of things, but the idea of is that if it's not broken, break it. And, you know, some, and, you know, because, yeah, because sometimes.
Is that the title of a book?
Yeah, you know, it's something like that. Yeah, you know, don't quote me exactly because it's something to that effect and I'd have to go find it and tell you exactly what it's called and I didn't think to do that before this call. But, yeah, I mean, the idea is that, you know, sometimes if things are just kind of going hunky-dory, that's the most difficult time to make change happen. When companies are really successful, unfortunately, we typically change because of pain, whether it's individually or whether it's in a collectively in a company. So when things are going great, that's one of the most difficult, or people perceive they're going great. It doesn't even mean that they are. That's one of the most difficult times to create change. So a lot of times what I would do is I would go in and I would do surveys. I'd survey their customers and I'd survey the employees and I'd get a sense of like the temperature of what's going on. And, you know, when you have an organization that's got problems, typically you're going to, that's going to come out when you do that. And, you know, they'd say, oh, my customers are happy. And I'm saying, okay, well, your customers are rating the company very low. So I know you think that these aren't your customers, but they're somebody's customers. Whose are they? And, you know, and it would to cause people to start to look and say, okay, maybe my customers like me as a person, but maybe they're frustrated with the experience that they're having with our company. So I would basically create that situation where I was showing them the problem so that then they could say, oh, okay, now I see why. I need to move out of my comfort zone. And then I would also make it, like, not so cozy to stay in the comfort zone so that it was cozier and nicer and more friendly to move out of the comfort zone into the new thing than it was to kind of stay in the old way. So using a lot of rewards to kind of go into the new. So it's really, you know, it's kind of very much Pavlov's dog-ish in a way. But, you know, it's the, okay, hey, good, you know, you did this, you know, great job, you know, kind of thing. And then really very... Exactly. So it's really, I mean, it's really, you know, very, I mean, I would say, I don't know if I'll put this in my book. Eventually I will write a book about how to change companies, but, you know, I don't know if I'll put in the Pavlov's dog, but very much that's often when I think about it. It is that positive reward, rewarding every little thing, the positive, and, you know, really kind of letting that, the negative go the same as we would, you know, for our kids or what have you, that to really create the positive kind of change. So, yeah, because, you know, because the other thing that's an interesting dynamic when you're changing companies is you might have a really great idea, but sometimes it's also about the way that it gets presented. So our human nature is such that if you have a really great idea, but it was my idea first and then you came up with it, it doesn't feel as fun anymore because now it's your idea. I mean, that's just our human nature, right? And so when we're doing things like that, we have to always consider what's the human nature. Human nature is people want to participate in the solution, so then you create, you know, facilitative ways to allow people to participate in the solution. I mean, I used to get all offended when the partners in my company would change my presentations, and then I realized this light bulb went on in my head, ah, when they're changing my presentation, they're reading my stuff, they're buying into what I'm doing, so it's I don't care if they change a few periods around that seems like not very significant to me, I'm getting their buy-in. And so it totally just made it to be where I would say, okay, go to town, you know, put your comments and your feedback in. And you know what? The thing is that doing change that way takes longer. in the beginning, it takes longer. It seems like it's more work. And so a lot of people are resistant to doing it that way because it feels like it's going to be a more difficult road. But the truth is you're creating a foundation that makes everything easier after that.
Very good. Very good. It sounds like you said that was very involved work. It's not necessarily what you do very much anymore. You still do some of that, right?
Right. Yeah, mostly now I...
Most of your time now with working one-on-one, right?
Right, mostly now. And, you know, I'll go back to the companies. I mean, sometimes I consult with companies that just want to take a look at their strategy, and let's say they... I'll look at it, because I can tell people pretty quickly with if their strategy is going to work or not for changing their organization, kind of whatever size it is. So sometimes I'll consult with people and look at their strategies. A lot of times I have clients who are leading change efforts and I'm helping them and they're out doing the work. I'm not so interested in being on ground for a couple of years anymore as I used to. That's not my thing. But I do have this uncanny ability to kind of go into a company and just get a feel for what's going on and really be able to tell people, okay, this direction's going to work or it's not going to work. Here's some things that you need to do that can really shave years off the painful process of change.
That's powerful. That is so awesome. So what do you believe it is that's given you the ability to really continue? Well, I guess one of the most important things is that continually ask yourself a question about, you know, not necessarily is there an easier way to do it, but is there a more efficient way to get this particular activity done, or is there a more impactful way to deliver this message? It sounds like you are continually asking yourself a question that I heard asked many years ago. Actually, it was a gentleman named Dr. Edward Deming.
Oh, yeah. When
he went
over
and taught the Japanese about Kaizen.
Mm-hmm.
Constant and never-ending improvement is what they are focused on, and
mm-hmm.
that's incremental improvements. And what people don't realize is that the impact that incremental improvements can have long-term. You don't necessarily see the change happen right away or the big impact of a change right away all the time, But 6 months from now, a year from now, one small change or one small improvement can have such a dramatic impact on a company's the company's employees' morale,
right.
Which is really what a company is made up of, is people, right?
Right.
You know, we talk about companies as if sometimes that we, I think people forget about the fact that there are people behind those doors or
mm-hmm.
in those offices. And really, it's so interesting to me to hear you talk about what you do and how you do it, because of what immediately comes to me is how I've been in that same place where I'm asking that question, you know, how can I improve what I'm doing? How can I get more out of what I'm doing? How can I maximize? How can I optimize? How can I, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's very exciting to hear the mindset that you have. You are already really good at what you do, and you just continually focus on how can I get better? You know, how can I be the absolute best at what I do? And I don't, you know, it's questionable as to whether or not if we will ever really say I am the absolute best at what I do. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
And we can say it, but there's always another level, right? There's always another level. If we start comparing ourselves to other people, we can certainly realize right away that there's always another level in every area of our lives. No matter
right.
how good we have it, no matter how good we are at what we do, the results that we're getting, we can always get better results. We're at 1 minute remaining in the show, so I want to real quickly, Pam, ask you, how can people find you? I've already typed your website address in the chat room. but I want also go ahead and give you the opportunity to announce it on air so that people can hear it, at especially ones who will be listening to the recording of the show.
Right, and I think hopefully we're using the PamRaglin.com website, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, so they can find me there, and that's probably a good way to get a hold of me. And I did want to say, too, I love it that you brought up Deming, because people ask me who my mentor is, and I always say Deming. He's the guy. Oh, yeah. What I love I love Deming because he did it his way. He said, basically, listen, I know how to help you, and if you want my help, listen to me. And, you know, it wasn't really till he was, like, in his 90s till we here in the United States finally recognized the guy. But, you know, he completely changed. I mean, we look at the Japanese automotive industry. They're still kicking our, you know what, and, you know, and it's really, you know, a tribute to him. So, yeah. And my question I ask is, how can I help people change more quickly and effortlessly? It's about that effortlessly. And just knowing that innately there is a way for us to do this much easier, and we don't have to really struggle.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, Pam, with 33 seconds remaining in the show, I want to thank you for coming on this special edition of Immediate Influence. Thank you very much.
Hi, you're so welcome.
Say to my listeners and guests, this is Ron Hudson with Your Success in Mind. We will see you on, or be looking for you on Monday night when I will have the social media expert, Chris Brogan. Again, with Your Success in Mind, this is Ron Hudson. Good night.